Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, Rex, it took us the fourth and final major championship of the year, but we finally figured out how to do the two-person, one-box look here on our StreamYard record. We only are having one mic. We'll hopefully figure this out for 2026. But for the time being, this is actually pretty good to have us doing this together for this preview podcast for the Open Championship.
I like this. We've got a lot of feedback over the last few weeks about maybe some of our backdrops. Certainly last week when I was at the Scottish Open, there were some strange things in the background. I pretty much stayed at an old castle that goes back centuries. So yes, it was a little musty, a little dusty. But this place is nice. Unfortunately, we couldn't figure out how to make it work in that direction. Because if you could see in that direction, it's the tiny little town of Port Rush. It's the North Sea. It's everything else on the other side. It's gorgeous over there and not so much on this side.
Yeah, it looks like Maine. It's as nice as Laguna Beach. We don't have quite as many people sunning today as we did on Sunday when I arrived. But I mean, the temperature is 70 degrees. It's beautifully sunny. I will say, though, Rex, this is probably the last really nice day of the week. And that actually makes me pretty excited. We're expecting temperatures somewhere in the mid-60s, intermittent rain and sun showers. You've been doing the weather forecast all week on Live From. What else can you tell us?
I got to be honest with you. I miss Berko. Berko loves doing the weather on the ones at major championships, and today was a bit of a struggle. The way they do their weather over here in the UK, it's not quite the way same way we do it in the United States. They don't do hour by hour. As a matter of fact, we couldn't even really get a solid forecast for Saturday and Sunday, and it's probably for good reason because the weather changes.
High level of uncertainty is the exact verbiage that they like to use.
I love the idea that on Monday they had what they call quote unquote thundery conditions. That's dangerous weather. There was lightning in the area that stopped play for a little while, and there's a little bit of that in the forecast. There's a little bit of everything in the forecast going forward. Now Thursday and Friday look a little bit better than what we anticipated. There's only early in the day, there's only about a 10% chance of rain. The wind's not nearly what we thought it was going to be. But later in the afternoon, it certainly gets much more foreboding. And I think you and I were just talking to with our colleague Aaron O on the walk over here. And the idea that this could be one of those opens where you end up with a draw issue, where you end up with a good side and a bad side. Right now, it looks like early late is going to be the good side of the draw, but you never really know.
Yeah, you really never know. And obviously, players will talk about it. If there's a clear difference in scoring between early, late, and late, early. Like, that's just a talking point. Players, yeah, they might be frustrated by it. By and large, if they play 10 to 20 of these, they figure out over the course of their career, it's going to even out eventually. Yes, it might be unfortunate this particular year, but over time, it is going to even out. What have been your impressions, Rex, of Royal Port Rush? We're back for an Open Championship for the second time in 6 years. Basically, that's like a St. Andrews old course level rotation, very unexpected, certainly after a 68-year wait. We knew what would happen in 2019. We had Shane Lowry win the golf tournament at 15 under par, six shots ahead of Tommy Fleetwood. He was the only player to finish double digits under par for the week. What's sort of your expectation in terms of scoring and what we can expect from the golf course this week?
I think we did our punch shots today. And you take that 15 under number and you start sort of dissecting it. If you looked at the forecast, again, we don't really know what to expect on Saturday and Sunday. However, if you look at the long range, even with the high degree of uncertainty, it looks like Sunday is probably going to be the worst day. That's the exact same thing that happened back in 2019. The worst of the weather showed up on Sunday with Shane Lowry in command. It was the highest scoring average for the week, almost 2.5 strokes over par on that Sunday. So we could have a repeat of what we ended up with last time around. I will say, coming here in 2019, there was such a vibe coming here because, again, hadn't been here in nearly a century. There was so many unknowns about this particular golf course. When it comes to the Open Championship, you always go back to these venues that you're used to seeing at least every 10 years. So this was so new. I think this time around, the expectation is we know what to expect. We know coming into this, it's going to be a demanding test. The weather is going to be what Northern Ireland delivers, which is normally very, very difficult conditions. But I talked with Adam Scott last week at the Scottish Open about this. And a week earlier, he had actually spent 4 days here doing a scouting trip, getting ready. And the difference is anyone who tuned in last week to the Scottish Open at Renaissance Club would have seen a brown and bouncy, almost yellowish golf course, what we've come to expect during certain summers over here in the UK. That's not the deal with this golf course. It's green, it's lush, but Adam told me it's just as firm as it was in 2019. You're still getting the same bounces. There's still that same level of uncertainty. So I think it's going to be a very similar test. But now that players have had at least one under the belt, by and large, I think it'll be a little bit easier because you understand what to expect.
Yeah, and not all links golf courses are created equally. You and I both played golf in this country. There was a lot of elevation changes, a lot of dunes. The holes are sort of framed that way. I think it's much more dramatic looking than a typical links that you would find either in England or in Scotland. Like last year, Troon is very basic, very out and back. And that's sort of what you do not have here at Portrush. I think it's much more dramatic. There's a lot more opportunities for shot shaping. I do think there's a lot more opportunities for scoring as well, whether it's the reachable par fives, also some drivable and short par fours as well that players can get after it as well. I think somewhere in like the 10 to 14.
I didn't answer your question.
Yeah, 10 to 14 under par range is probably what we're looking at this week. How about the player storylines? We've had players come in and out of the media center all week long. Actually, Rory McIlroy, probably for the first time in his career, came in on a Monday. And that people might be like, what's the big deal? If you peel back the curtain, typically these major organizations will put sort of like the fringe storylines on Monday. Like I always think at the Masters, you might have the Latin America amateur champion. This year we had Bernhard Langer, who was making his final Masters appearance. Those are the sort of stories that you get on Monday. Did you sort of draw any conclusions or have any suggestions to what the RNA or what Rory was thinking, having him be the very first press conference of this Open Championship, 2 o'clock on Monday, getting out of the way?
If you're trying to read between the lines, and no one really knows, if you're not in Rory's camp, you don't particularly know this, but if you're trying to read between the lines, it's what he talked about. He's going to embrace this one. It's, look, he tried to hide from it last time around in 2019. He tried to pretend like this wasn't a big deal. He tried to convince himself that this is just another Open Championship, just another tournament. And we all know that it isn't. And that probably went a long way to why he made an 8 on the first hole, found out of bounds where I didn't even know there was out of bounds on that first hole back in 2019, to miss the cut. Very emotional week for him. He had to come to grips with a lot of things. This time around, he's just going to embrace it. He's going to embrace the spotlight. He's going to embrace the crowds. We saw him this afternoon and yesterday signing tons and tons and tons of autographs. He knows what this means to Northern Ireland. He knows what this means to his legacy. I thought it was fascinating. He was asked last week at the Scottish Open about the idea that winning the Open Championship is special. And winning the Open Championship at Portrush in Northern Ireland, 90 minutes from where he grew up in Hollywood near Belfast, that's the pinnacle for him. Like, we've talked about this idea. Like, okay.
He said he had this event,
circled,
this Open, circled even more than the Masters, and obviously knew how significant that would be for the course of his career.
And he's decided not to try to hide from that. Like, if you just want to take the baggage on, and I think that explains a lot. Like, okay, let me just walk in the media center and answer all of the questions that I know are coming instead of trying to hide from it.
I took a different sort of meaning to what Rory did. Being the first player, at least the first 2 days of official practice on Tuesday and Wednesday, he was the very first player on the golf course as well, teeing off before 7 a.m. local time, actually played 18 holes both days, which is certainly a surprise. You really don't see players do that all that much. It's typically like a 9-9-9 type of schedule. Then he went out for 9 holes on Wednesday, more about 11 o'clock. And so I saw a player who he might be saying that he wants to sort of embrace the atmosphere.
You're not buying it.
To me, he was almost sort of skirting the early week attention and expectation. It made sense why he said that he wanted to tee off first thing on Monday and Tuesday. Practice rounds of the major championships have begun to take too long. He did a similar thing at Oakmont. To me, he's also dodging a little bit of the spotlight, potentially girding himself, not just physically, but also emotionally for what he's going to be experiencing. It took him by surprise, he said, on the walk up to the first tee in 2019 on Thursday, just how badly the folks here wanted him to win. He's not going to be surprised this time. I think he's trying to get himself, whatever he can do over these next 3 days, to get himself in the best frame of mind emotionally to get to that point.
I went out on them today on live from and said, I don't think he's going to make an 8 on the first hole. I could be wrong.
There is OB left and right. Now, they did thin out some of the gorse bushes. Yes. That is a terrifying tee shot. I don't expect a whole lot of drivers on that first hole.
My guess is it's an iron off the tee. He takes his 4 or 5 and walks off and tells Harry that 3 shots better. let's get on with it. So I think that's probably how he ends up starting. And I made this argument to you on live from that we talked about the idea. Well, where's the biggest question going into the opening round? And mine was Rory, Rory, Rory. I'll lean into the idea that if I just gave you the blank resume, took Rory's name off of and said, this player has accomplished this season. Here are his stats. Here's what he's been able to do in Open Championships. Of course, he's going to be the favorite, or right behind Scottie Scheffler, or maybe even third when you put Jon Rahm in the conversation. But he's going to be in the top 3 one way or the other. It's when you add in all of the emotions, when you add in the idea that he is only going to have this opportunity at best once every 10 years. And he doesn't have a lot of 10 years left in his career.
It's funny because we talked a lot about Rory on Sunday, following the Scottish Open, finished two shots shy of Chris Goddard. And there was a lot of comments on YouTube saying, all you guys do is talk about Rory. Rory, Rory, Rory. Why are you guys fixated on this guy? How can you not be? He is the biggest storyline at this Open Championship, as he has been for the entirety of these major championships in 2025. Here you have a player who is in the prime of his career, who just completed the career Grand Slam at the Masters, and now at Royal Portrush, an hour from his childhood home, has an opportunity, in my opinion, to complete one of the most, I think, individually consequential seasons in history. Yeah. From becoming the sixth player to complete the career Grand Slam to then win a home open at a place that is so near and dear to his heart. That is why we are talking about this, because it is a huge story, a potentially historic storyline that could unfold this week at Royal Portrush. You mentioned Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, gave what I think is probably the most viewed answer to a question in major championship press conference
There's
history.
A couch right there. I'm going to go lay on that couch while I give this answer, because I feel like that's where I need to be, where you just need to be laying on the couch talking to the counselor.
It was a therapy session, and it was essentially Scottie Scheffler offering a glimpse into the psyche of a professional athlete, not just a professional golfer, but a professional athlete. Essentially, Scottie was saying that his foundation is his faith and his family, and he doesn't derive much long-term satisfaction from individual success. He has said something similar in the course of his career. What was your take on what eventually became a viral 5-minute answer from Scottie Scheffler?
Well, I think that's it. It was a 5-minute answer by Scottie Scheffler. He has said something similar to this in the past. He has alluded to the idea that it is family, it is faith, it's his friends. That's what matters to him. Like, he'd rather be a good father than a major champion, which is saying something more about Scottie Scheffler than it is about golf or being a professional athlete. That's just the way he was wired. I kind of took the leap that whatever Rory McIlroy has been going through the last few weeks since winning the career Grand Slam at the Masters, green jacket for the first time, clearly Rory has been wrestling with his own things. When it comes to what does this really mean, getting to the top of the mountain? Where do I go from here? Rory's words, not mine. I climbed Everest, and now I got to figure out how to climb back down. I think that made Scottie look into himself, because Scottie went to the Nelson, which he won this year by multiple strokes. And having grown up in Dallas, that's the one that he always marked on his calendar. Like, this is the one I want to win. He was dominant this year on his way to winning it for the first time. And he talked about celebrating with his family and his wife and his sister, and then being like, Maybe that wasn't worth, you know, and I love the idea that he's struggling with, why does this mean so much to me? Like, you can't come up with a good answer. I will say, I think it probably got interpreted in some weird ways.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I was talking with our colleague, Jamie Weir, who we just had on last week from Sky Sports. And the idea that he was doing some hits on Sky Sports about it last week, and one of the announcers he was talking to about it was came across as, I'm worried about Scottie Scheffler. And I went the exact opposite way.
There was plenty of headlines. Now, they were sort of clickbaity from our friends of the UK tabloids, but it's essentially like Scottie Scheffler looking for an out, Scottie Scheffler unhappy. Scottie Scheffler says he'll quit the game. He made some sort of reference about how if anything that I'm doing on the golf course begins to affect the relationship I have with my wife, Meredith, or my son, or the growing family that he'll continue to have, like, he will quit that day. Though that was sort of the takeaway of, I think, certainly across the pond. Well, I think national reporters probably had a different view of it.
Because I would counter that and say it's the Ted Lasso line that I'm going to mess this up. But he was talking with Jamie, the star on his team, who believes a lot in himself and is very conceited. And Ted Lasso's response is, I don't think you know how emotionally healthy that comment really was, that you love yourself. Like, I don't think you get how important that is and how you were on the right side of this. I would say that whatever Scottie was trying to get across in that 5-minute sort of spiel to the media and tried to work it out in his own head, it's very healthy, I would say.
I think it's extremely healthy. And I think he was applauded in a lot of circles, including on the UK tabloids, to have his priorities in order, which we've talked about Scottie Scheffler. We've written about Scottie Scheffler. We know by this point in his career sort of who he is and what makes him tick. I certainly think it's healthy to have that. And I certainly don't think Scottie is alone, and that this is a singular, very strange existence that the players sort of at the peak of their profession experience, whether it's Michael Jordan, whether it's Michael Phelps, Tom Brady sort of went through this as well, is there, these singular athletes are not addicted to sort of the completion of a task or the celebration or reveling in their success. What they're addicted to is the chase. That's why Rory had the lull, because he was trying to figure out what else he could chase. Now, at this point in the season, it's pretty obvious to him. He can chase his claret jug at his home in Royal Portrush. He can also chase, in a couple months' time, an away victory in the Ryder Cup. In the future, he has already alluded to the fact that he wants to win an Open at St. Andrews, the Old Course, after coming so close in 2022. He's already mentioned that he wants to win a U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. And so he has allowed himself that reset over a couple months to have some big dreams, to have some big priorities. Scotty is very, I think, present in his process. And so it is obviously, this has sort of unlocked the key to his success. He doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. You know, he doesn't celebrate maybe as much as some of us. Like when you won your sports Emmy, you were incommunicado for weeks, reveling in that success. I think that's sort of the recipe for what Sky does really well, is he's just day by day, loves doing the work. And then at the end of the season, at the end of his career, the accolades and the accomplishments and the trophies, that's what's going to stack up. But sort of right now, he's not shooting big, and he's not necessarily soaking it in either.
One of the most enjoyable things about the Open Championship, more times than not, we stay close enough to the golf course that we can walk. And it's only a 15-minute walk to the TV compound, and then we get a cart ride in. However, it is warm. So it's in the 70s, which is warm for Northern Ireland. So I'm going to go ahead and say this right now. Since we've decided to go ahead in the one box, you smell like outside.
Mm, I don't doubt it. I've dripping things down my back. Let's talk about some of the other contenders. We just did a live from Hit. We talked about other contenders. You mentioned John Rahm, who you were bullish on. Actually, if you guys are paying attention, he's outside the top 50 in the official world golf ranking, which obviously is ridiculous. He's all the way up, though, to number 2 in data golf, which takes into account live results as well as PGA Tour results. Why are you bullish on John Rahm's chances this week at Portrush?
On the punch shots on golfchannel.com, nbsports.com/golf, at least for the time being. You and I both, you picked him as a winner, which I think is very, very good. I went with Rory, as you pointed out, I think for the fourth time this year, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe for the third time.
And probably for the 35th time in your career.
Sure, sure. I was right. At least once this year, which is better than you, because I don't think you were right at all. And I think you picked John Rahm to win. I picked him as the contender to watch for a lot of different reasons. You look at his record in this event, he always seems to play this championship well. He certainly understands Lynx golf. There are no question marks there like there are for a Bryson DeChambeau, for example. He's got 4 top 10 finishes in his last 5 starts in this championship. And then you look at what he's done on LIV Golf. You can't ignore that. No, he hasn't won, but he's done pretty much everything except win on that circuit. And there's still really good players on that tour. So I don't think you can debate that. The part that gets me is how much he truly seems to love Lynx golf, because there are plenty of players in this field that come over here and play this event kind of because it's a major, not because they particularly love this brand of golf, not because they love the history of the game, not because they love that this forces you out of what is normal week in and week out on the PGA Tour, but because it's a major. Of course, you have to go over and play it. John clearly loves this style of golf. And when you go back to 2019, if there's a common thread between what Shane did back then and what we can expect this week, he was first in the field in greens in regulation. I think he hit 56 greens that week. That's going to be huge. And John Rahm is still one of the game's best iron players.
He certainly is. He's just seen through the bag improvement from 2024 to 2025. At this point in his season, he's doing everything well. Came close last week at the LIV event at Valderrama, not sort of an apples to apples comparison to what you're going to face here at Portrush, but they did have high wins, at least for the first 2 rounds of that golf tournament. Steadied himself well, shot 65 in the final round, comes in here with a lot of confidence. You're right, John Rahm is my pick to win. You brought up a point of like guys coming over here. What percentage of the field, we got 156 players, what percentage of the field do you think has absolutely zero chance and they know it? I'm talking about guys who are just here, for the experience, and they know that they cannot win this championship.
Oh, I would say that they know it very, very low, because I don't think anybody out of the 156 players is willing to look themselves in the mirror and be like, yep, I'm not good enough for this. Like, that's not the way professional golfers are wired. Now, there's probably some, I think, of Padraig Harrington, although that's probably a bad example. He probably thinks he can win this. Some players, because you can play in this event as a past champion until you're 60 years old. If Ernie Els would have played, he did not. But if he would have played, that would be one of the few players I would think that, yeah, no, I don't have it anymore. But I don't – everyone on that first tee, as the CEO of the RNA said this afternoon, has earned their spot, has earned their right to be on that first tee starting on Thursday morning. So I don't think very few of them know it in their minds that, yeah, I'm just over here just trying to have fun.
I think there's like more than half the field
that's
playing practice rounds in this championship and saying, I have no chance unless this is like lightning in a bottle stuff.
Sure.
And I get incredibly lucky. It just, Lynx golf requires such an exacting and it's exacting. And yet it's also sort of lucky in the sense that you're doing a lot of guesstimating and you're doing a lot of judging. Like obviously off the tee, you need to be precise. And that's why Sepp Straka was one of the players that I sort of wanted to watch this week. With the positioning of the bunkers, you really have to be strategic in where you want to go, what club you want to hit, and obviously you need to have a pure strike to land it with the proper amount of spin to not go into the bunkers, which, as we know in links golf, are very, very penal. So there's certainly an exacting element to playing links golf, but there's also the imagination. There's also creativity. There's using the ball on the ground. It's trying to avoid the poor bounces or the bad breaks. And so there's a little bit of an element of luck in that sense. But I think particularly Americans, if they're not used to this style of golf, will be going out here. And if this is their first time playing links golf, maybe they've done it for a couple of years and just be like, I got no shot. Maybe my ball flight is too high. Maybe my golf ball is too spinny. I don't like playing in a left to right wind, so I'm going to go, you know, six over par on this particular side because this is what the wind's going. I think it's actually pretty high. And it sort of leads me into my Bryson DeChambeau thought, is that here's a player who has said that he needs to adapt his game to links golf. He says all the right things, that, yeah, I need to work the ball into the wind and sort of be a little bit more strategic in that way. That runs counter to everything that Bryson DeChambeau does. Because he plays very few practice holes. What he does on the range is try and sort of author a repeatable robotic swing over and over and over again. That's going to work great 51 weeks a year. But in the Open Championship, you have to be a more complete player and you have to have finesse. I think there's more players like Bryson, particularly in this day and age, who have grown up on TrackMan than who are sort of the artists like a Scottie Scheffler.
Well, I don't disagree with you on that front, but Bryson doesn't think he doesn't have any chance. Like I put him as the disappointment in the punch shots for the reasons you just pointed out, because this is more art than science. And he's never going to never allow himself to be the artist that Rory McIlroy wants to be.
But Bryson thinks that he is an artist, but everything he does
is
scientific in nature in trying to create a repeatable motion. That's essentially what he's doing. He's trying to plot his way around the golf course and do the exact same swing over and over again. That eliminates variables. The Open Championship, and we're staring out at a windblown day, that is just rife with variables.
Bryson wants the constants. He wants the repeatable swing. He wants to know, I'm going to hit this 9-iron 165 yards, not 166, not 164, 165 yards. He wants that in his life. Every part of his game, he wants to be that. Lynx golf is all about variables, as you just pointed out. It's going to be the bad bounce. It's going to be the wind gust. It's going to be you on the wrong side of the draw. It's going to be whatever it is that's going to catch you off guard. And it's the player, by and large, that rolls with those bad bounces that ends up on top. Because if you're Bryson and you allow that bad bounce to get to you and then it affects your next shot, it just snowballs after that. I'm not saying that I don't think Bryson can never be a contender here, because I always go back to the year that Phil Mickelson won at Mirrorfield. I was in the gym working out with his trainer on the West Coast. We were at Torrey Pines. And he actually said, this is Phil's year at the Open Championship. And I was stunned. And my line was, do you not know his record in that championship?
But he, at that time, he made significant changes.
Yes.
Remember to how he was playing. Yeah. He worked with the late Dave Pels. He was working on these three-quarter shots. He was flighting it differently. He was shaping it both ways. Bryson has not made that sort of adjustment. And again,
he gets there eventually. Yeah.
And look, there certainly is a theory that you should not overhaul your game for just 1 week, right? You may just shrug and say, it's not going to happen. To my point, I think there's probably a good number of players in the field who probably think that way. However, if he wants to be viewed, I think, as a complete golfer, a golfer who could win all four major championships, a golfer like a Scotty or a Rom or a Phil, I think he needs to get to that level and really devote the energy to playing this style of golf in this style of way.
And I don't think he's there yet. That was kind of my point. That's why I made him the person who's going to leave here most disappointed. And I'm going to contend, and I'm going to stick with that, because I'll go back to last week at the Scottish Open. On Tuesday night, we were playing North Berwick, and right before we teed off, Keith Mitchell walked off the 18th green. Of course, he was playing in the Scottish Open just around the corner at Renaissance Club, and had a conversation with him. And I asked him, do you normally do this? And he said, I don't play golf the week of tournaments. I practice. I go to the range. I work on my game. I never play golf, not at the tournament site, certainly not at the golf course that's not on the tournament site. But he had played so poorly in Lynx Golf that, to your point, he decided that I can't figure this out on the range. The answer isn't there. The answer is out on the golf course, figuring out how to play the shots and how to roll with the punches that are Lynx Golf.
The turf is different. The wind is different. It's heavier. Heavy. Obviously, the greens are slower. They're about 3 feet slower on average with a stint meter compared to what they typically face at other major championships or on the PGA Tour. This is the final major championship of the season. Who are a couple other players, Rex, who you have your eye on, either to sort of salvage what's been a lost year in the majors, cap something really impressive? Who sort of has your attention in that respect?
I was curious yesterday. You had a good note on Jordan Spieth that you shouldn't have gotten to on live TV, but you plowed through stop signs just to get it. Just for inside the audience here, when a producer tells you to rap, that's TV talk for stop talking. And one of us doesn't know when to rap. So I thought it was an interesting note, even though you probably shouldn't have delivered it, being that we were on TV. He needs a big week. He's right there on that top 50 bubble, and we know how important that is. He played from outside that bubble this year and got plenty of sponsor exemptions, but we've been pretty vocal, not just we, the rural we in the media, about maybe the Jordan Spieths and the Ricky Fowlers of the world. Nothing against Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler of the world.
Player A and Player B. Let's just call them Player A and Player B.
That there is something to be said for the idea that giving all of those exemptions into signature events to the same two players week in and week out, that tilts the competitive integrity of the field, and that there needs to be something done on the tour's level to make sure that A, either get rid of the sponsor exemptions into those events, which I think is the easiest fix and the best way to do it, or come up with some sort of system that limits them to two or three starts. However, he could have a big week this week, and not only would it wrap up his season going into next year, but the Ryder Cup's going to be pretty empty if he's not on that team.
I think I wasn't even going to go in this direction, but I'm glad you brought up, since I caught up with Jordan on Tuesday. He's 48 in the FedEx Cup. You need to be obviously the top 50 to get the BMW Championship, get exempt into the signature events. It's been sort of a turbulent couple of weeks for Jordan Spieth. Remember the last time we saw him play was at the Travelers Championship.
Well, yeah, baby. I don't know if I call that turbulent.
Well, there's been a lot going on. Whirlwind. How about that? How about whirlwind for Jordan Spieth? So he withdrew from the Travelers Championship, the first time in his career that he withdrew from a tournament because of an injury, had a rib issue that quite frankly locked up other areas of his body, couldn't do it. That was huge because that's a no-cut signature event with a lot of points. He was inside the top 35 at that point in the FedEx Cup standings, looking good to secure his spot in the BMW. Instead, now has sort of found himself on that top 50 bubble. You mentioned the Ryder Cup. He's 26th in the U.S. Cups team standings. You might think that he has no chance whatsoever to be on Keegan Bradley's team. I don't think the decision makers for Team USA are viewing it that way either. He was hurt for the entirety of 2024, ended up having season-ending wrist surgery. He has played very well relative to his potential U.S. team members, but he knows that this is an opportunity for him over these next couple weeks to not just secure his spot in signature events, but also make a strong push for that U.S. Ryder Cup team as well. He did not like the prospect, especially with a newborn at home, and his baby was born last Thursday, basically got home from the hospital and crossed the Atlantic. He does not like the idea of potentially playing four in a row, adding a start at the Wyndham Championship, and then going all three for the FedEx Cup playoffs. So it's a big week for Jordan Spieth. I would throw out a name. I mentioned Sepp Straka, a player who has missed major championship cuts three times in a row in 2025, multiple time winner on the PGA Tour this season.
I would say that none of those other three majors were good fits for his game. Certainly Oakmont was not. I would
if it's going to be the
same argument about Quail Hollow.
I pushed back a little bit on Oakmont just because that was going to be such a premier driving test. And Sepp Straka, though he's quite short by PGA Tour standards, he is quite accurate. That's why I like him this week with the positioning. I like his iron play as well. But I think sort of relative to how he has played in other events this season, I think it's a big week for Sepp Straka. I would also throw like a player like a Ludvig Åberg, who, although he flashed at the Masters, has not done much of anything over the past couple months. Popped up again last week at the Scottish Open, was in really good position through 36 holes, faded on the weekend, still finished inside the top 10 for the first time in months. The sausage finger's up. I can actually see it in person.
You never get to see it.
I finally get to see it. Please go ahead.
Come waggling at you. You get a little worried about it. I would put Patrick Reed in there as well, because you look at where he is in his game right now.
Are we really doing this? Do you really think that a Team USA that is going to be priding itself on unity and togetherness and being like a family, do you really think they're going to reincorporate a Patrick Reed onto the team, knowing how the last couple of Ryder Cups have gone, particularly in 2018, when he threw not just Tiger Woods, but also his captain, Jim Furyk, who could be the pseudo-captain if Keegan Bradley is a playing captain at Bethpage.
I'll actually one-up you. 2019 at the President's Cup.
His caddy was punching out guys. Tough.
I had multiple people call me, tell me that he was a cancer. A cancer in that team room. So I get where you're coming from. I'm just making the argument from, if he has any chance at all, this is going to be his week to do it. He is one of the game's best ball strikers, one of the game's best iron players, which is going to be key on this golf course.
Good scrambler. Good scrambler.
And he's a good scrambler. And I think that's going to be another key stat when you look at this golf course. And he's playing well. He's in his last two starts, he finished tied for 10th, and he won the LIV Golf, the LIV event in Dallas. So, no, to answer your question at the start of this, I don't think he ends up on that team. He's going to have to be a pick. And you're absolutely right. At some point, Captain Keegan, or whoever the pseudo-captain is going to be, is going to have to make a decision on chemistry. And if that's what this is based on, he's out.
I mean, does he warrant consideration at this point?
Yes.
Absolutely. He absolutely warrants consideration. They would have to overlook a lot of other attributes and outside noise as it relates to Patrick Reed to put him on that team. Again, if he finishes top three this week, certainly if he wins, then I think it's even more of a discussion point. But I do think I certainly think he has an outside chance. But again, things are going to have to break his way over the next couple of weeks. You are picking Rory McIlroy. I've got John Rahm. Anything else you'd like to say to the people before we wrap up this preview podcast for the Open Championship?
Well, it was a busy news week, and we kind of got into it earlier today on the early live from the idea that the CEO of the RNA was asked repeated questions about where sort of the next few Open Championships are going to be. And look, this is about two golf courses. We can sit and split hairs about exactly where it's going to go over the next 5 or 10 years. But this is about going to Turnberry, and this is about going to Mirrorfield. It's been a long time since it was at Mirrorfield. CEO had no answers whatsoever.
Really about anything. It was not the best introduction to the world for Mark Darvin. He was sort of
Didn't win that press conference.
He was cagey on a lot of topics that he probably shouldn't have been.
I agree. And there aren't any answers on this front. However, I think Mirrorfield probably falls into the rotation relatively soon. I talked to a lot of people last week at the Scottish Open. Certainly, it's one of the best open venues. There are some logistics concerns. My counter to that today on Live From was, I think every open venue has some level of logistics concerns, even St. Andrews. And we can all agree that that place was built to host major championships. So I think they get it done there. The interesting part of this, when it comes to Turnberry, is there's a couple of elements to it. Is the golf course good enough? Yes. By all accounts, what they've done there with the changes have made it absolutely good enough to host another Open Championship. Are there logistical concerns? Yes, like I just said. But all of the Opens have some sort of concerns. The bottom line is, it's going to come down to politics. And it's Trump Turnberry, and we are in the United Kingdom, and sometimes those things are complicated. So it's going to be fun to watch how that unfolds.
Yeah, the next Open date for the Open is 2028. Mark Darvin, one of the things he did say on Wednesday, was that he hopes to have an answer sometime in the next 12 months as to when that championship will be staged. You mentioned Mirrorfield. Sort of the issues he cited were a modern tournament practice grounds for the players, as well as cabling, like broadcast cabling, that meets expectations for a modern Open Championship. Those seem to be sort of minor issues. Even a Scottish reporter brought up the fact that, can't you just use the tournament practice area at the Renaissance Club, the neighboring club, the club that you were at last week?
And that's what I said. Like, last week at the Scottish Open, they had huge crowds. And I think they learned logistically. And when we say next door, sometimes we do that roughly like a mile or two away. Literally, those two golf courses butt up against each other. If you look at the 19 at Mirrorfield, it literally, they had to buy a piece of Renaissance's property because they wanted to extend that tee. And there's tons of parking over there. There's tons of room for infrastructure. So yeah, that I didn't buy that argument.
And to be clear, players this week also have to be carted to the tournament practice area. It's not like it's necessarily right next to the first tee and then they're ambling onto there. As you mentioned, every one of these golf courses, these historic sites, has some sort of logistical issue. If you want to get back there, as they should with Mirrorfield, has last hosted an Open in 2013, won by Phil Mickelson. And Turnberry has not hosted one since the classic duel, Stuart Sink, Tom Watson in 09. Again, politics will likely be in the mix there. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Braxton Lapp. Let us know in the YouTube comment section if you actually like this look, or should we go back to the split screen where we're also like 20 feet away? You let us know. We'll do whatever it is you say. You guys, in the meantime, NBCSports.com/golf for all latest news, notes, and updates. Rex and I'll be back for mini pods Thursday, Friday, and Saturday after completion of those tournament rounds. And then on Sunday, we'll be doing the full-fledged 52-minute made-for-TV edition, recapping the Open Championship, recapping the major championship season in general. Should be a lot of fun. All right, enjoy Thursday at the Open. Talk to you guys Thursday night.